Now, here's an article from WND.com. A December 1998 Iranian military journal published an article titled Electronics to Determine Fate of Future Wars, and it detailed how an electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, an attack on the electronic infrastructure of the United States caused by the net detonation of a nuclear bomb over the U.S., would simply be crippling. In a moment, you are going to hear 3 hours that could scare the living daylights out of you. F. Michael Maloof joins us, his work, A Nation Forsaken, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you about our guest. F. Michael Maloof has spent 30 years of federal service in the U.S. Defense Department. Now, while with the Department of Defense, Maloof was the Director of Technology Security Operations, heading up a 10-person team involved in halting the diversion of military critical technologies to some of those countries of national security and proliferation concerns, and those involved in sponsoring terrorism as well. He's put together a work that we have talked about in this program on EMPs, electromagnetic pulses, A Nation Forsaken. Michael, welcome to the program. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. And the book just came out today, did it not?
That's correct.
That's perfect timing here. Tell me a little bit more about your service in the Defense Department before we get into this.
Well, I went in during the Cold War period under the Reagan administration. I was actually asked to set up a team that would stop diversions of high technology then going to the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact into China. And we were quite successful in affecting the ability of these countries to acquire technologies for the military. And our plan basically was at that time to bring down the Soviet Union. And by denying them these access to these type of technologies, they got some, certainly. But we were able to identify front companies around the world and put a stop to them working with our allies to cooperate with us. And many times we had to bludgeon them to cooperate, but ultimately we got cooperation and we worked around the world through Asia to Europe, even into South Africa and Latin America to stop these diversions. And we were ultimately successful.
It is amazing what you can do behind the scenes.
Yes.
That really alter governments, isn't it?
Well, I'm a behind-the-scenes guy, and I always call myself the proctologist of export controls. Our office handled the export controls, so we, by law, would review exports to various countries of national security concern and work in conjunction with other departments such as State and Department of Commerce to determine whether or not we would allow certain exports to go, knowing full well that if it was a high targeted item, it would ultimately go into the military. And probably one of my most outstanding cases was the old Toshiba affair many years ago, in which a Japanese company sold machine tools very surreptitiously to the then Soviet Union to make skewed propellers to silence submarines. And to this day, we're still realizing the impact of that export.
I remember being in the Navy, Michael, 9 years for me. That's all we ever talked about is, you know, how silent can these subs go?
Yep.
And it was always the propeller that they were concerned about.
Yep. Well, we found out how they got it, where they got it from. It almost brought down the government of Japan because we had tremendous resistance with the government at that time to bring this issue to their attention. And finally, we prevailed with a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth. But it also brought in a Norwegian company called Kongsberg, which was a defense contractor at the time. Mm-hmm. And they had a backdoor approach to the Eastern Bloc at that time, and they were selling the computer numerical controllers that could then be put on these 5 to 9 axis machine tools. And at the time, the Soviet Union was only limited to 3 axis at most. So what happened, and this is the incredible thing about technology today, and we're seeing that going out the door, we see it still being targeted, is that a $9 million sale cost us approximately $50 billion because it uh, made our SOSA systems almost inert.
Amazing. Where do we stand compared to other countries today, Michael, in terms of technology? Are we way ahead, or are they catching up, or where are we?
Well, they're, in some cases, they're coming up with functional equivalencies. It's not as sophisticated as our stuff. We still have the technological edge, although we're quickly losing it because of the so-called level playing field, in which thousands of their students come to the United States every year and study. And they learn they learn the basic sciences, and then the applied sciences, which they're not supposed to have access to, but they ultimately get it. Once they have that base, then they can start building on their own. And one of the other cases I worked was the Hughes-Lorale case, in which it created all kinds of wailing and gnashing of teeth because it allowed exports to by defense contractors in the United States to go to the Chinese military that ultimately wound up to improve upon their intercontinental ballistic missiles. That resulted in Congress actually forming what was then called the Cox Commission to investigate technology transfers to the Chinese. And what we ultimately determined was that the technology transfers actually assisted what they had acquired and in improving their ICBMs, and we're now realizing the impact of that today. So it takes about 5 to 10 years before we realize the full impact of these transfers that occurred 5 to 10 years ago.
The Chinese, Michael, seem to be coming on like gangbusters. My perception, or is that real?
No, that's for real. They are showing greater and greater power projection. We would allow certain transfers to go, but they had to fill. They had to not violate certain special mission areas, as we called them. We had 6 special mission areas. Anti-submarine warfare was one of them. Intelligence gathering was another. Improvement of ballistic missile systems was yet another one, and on down the line. But the technologies could go. That might be applied to some of these areas, but it would be at such a low level it would not be effective. And we also had counters to those technologies. All of that, and then when the Cold War ended, all of that went away. It only, as a result, policies in the beginning with the Clinton administration then allowed us to make sure that we had a good end user as opposed to a bad end user. Well, it didn't matter into those countries because there was no way to verify, and they could transfer the products and the technologies, sensitive technologies, once they got into country. This would also include telecommunications. This is one of the major ones, and also encryption, the capability to encrypt. And we're seeing that today. We cannot still break their encryption. In spite of our algorithms and our NSA and what have you. It's very, very difficult to break Chinese algorithms for their encryption.
Well, and I'm amazed at how these countries are rapidly getting into the rocket race, basically, where they're getting missiles and they're being able to launch into a space. I mean, it's just unbelievable how fast it's coming along now.
Well, once you give them that base, then as I said, they can take off. The Chinese have helped the Pakistanis. They've helped the North Koreans over time. The Iranians, they've all worked together over a period of time. And it was actually the North Korean, North Koreans actually began exports of missiles, so their Scuds, Scud Bs and Scud Cs, and which then formed the basis. And they actually got it from a copy of a Russian export to Egypt at the time. And then they reverse engineered. And one of the other cases I worked was trying to identify the steel that was used in that, because we knew that they didn't have a capability of making that particular kind of steel. It was laced with titanium so that it could hold the highly corrosive liquid fuel that was in these missiles for up to a year. We were wondering, well, how can they do that? Otherwise, this fuel, it's nitric acid, will just eat through the metal. And what we discovered was that the Japan was actually, I think it was Sumitomo, that was actually, metals was actually exporting this particular grade of steel into North Korea through surreptitious means. And it was not controlled at the time under the missile technology control regime. And as a consequence, they were obtaining more and more of this steel plates before we approached the Japanese government and put a stop to it. It was quite an investigative effort on our part to figure out what where that steel came from. And we looked all over the world, and we finally determined that it came out of Japan because of the quality of the, of the steel.
Michael, let's talk about the book that came out today, A Nation Forsaken. Give us an overview, first of all, about what it's all about.
Well, it's about how the it's purposely titled A Nation Forsaken because the administrations, previous administrations, as well as the Obama administration and Congress, have been very aware of the effects of electromagnetic pulse and what it can do to our electronics in the event, in case there's an EMP event, whether it's natural or man-made. We're entering into a period now where we have solar storms about ready to reach their most intense period in this 11-year cycle, and our electronics are extremely vulnerable to that, and nothing has been done. And one of the problems that we see is that, for example, the Department of Homeland Security does not include an EMP event as one of their national planning scenarios. And these national planning scenarios is what makes the agency kick into high gear to in cases of national catastrophes to deal with emergencies such as this. There's 15 of them, and EMP is not one of them. And they've been criticized by members of Congress about it, but they still haven't done anything about it.
That's crazy that they wouldn't jump all over that.
Yes. It's not happening. They're aware of EMP. All the government agencies from the Department of Energy, Department of Defense, Homeland Security, they're all very aware of EMP and its effects. And, in fact, there was an EMP commission, congressionally mandated EMP commission, that put out a report in 2008 that directed the Department of Homeland Security to do just that, to make EMP one of the planning scenarios, so that they would have it on hand, ready to go, in case we had a catastrophic event, principally from a solar storm, but even from an attack from a man-made, from a high-altitude explosion.
What are you more concerned, Michael? What concerns you the most, an attack from a nation or from the sun?
Well, there's near term and long term. Long term will be an attack. Near term, the intensity of the sun that of solar storms that we're now seeing. NASA has come out, as well as the National Academy of Sciences, has stated that 2013 and 2014 are going to be the most intense periods of this latest 11-year cycle. And some of these storms can be as large as the Earth itself. And if we have a direct hit, we're going to have some very, very serious problems due to the vulnerabilities of our electrical systems, our electrical grid systems. You got to keep in mind that for the United States in particular, it's such an advanced country because it's all technology based, and this makes us very heavily dependent on our electric power, our electronics, our telecommunications, our information networks, our financial systems, our transportation systems. And while we put a great stress and dependency on that, it's also becoming our greatest vulnerability and ultimately this nation's Achilles heel. So I think that when we have any one of these critical infrastructures, such as telecommunications, energy, transportation, if anyone is affected, national grid, if anyone is affected, it affects all the infrastructures. It has a cascading effect because of the interdependencies of these infrastructures of our modern society, upon which our entire society today depends. Less developed countries will have less of a problem because of the less reliance that they have on electronics. That's why mechanical means is far better in these type of events, drawing water. But you see, we don't grow our food as much as we used to back in the 19th century. The effect of one of these things could put us back into the 19th century if it's effective enough and it's direct enough. Now, we've had increasing solar storms hitting around Earth recently. There've been some diversions. There've been some episodes of blackouts. They've lasted a few days, but that's only because these flares didn't have a direct hit on us. But they're anticipating the possibility of one that equates to perhaps the worst recorded one that was back in 1859. Okay. That lasted for 3 days.
The Carrington event.
The Carrington event. That's correct.
Well, we've been lucky then. We've been dodging this bullet. Yes. You know, in many cases, when an X flare has taken off, it was not in direct alignment with planet Earth. But you're right. Eventually, it's going to happen.
Yes. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
That's right. Could be tomorrow, could be 10 years, who knows, it's going to happen.
That's correct.
Explain how the electromagnetic pulse, the EMP, works.
Well, it's a high-intensity burst of electromagnetic energy, which is caused by very rapid acceleration of charged particles. And they're so powerful and supercharged that they can knock out or completely fry any of our unprotected electronics and electrical systems, depending upon its intensity. That's why our national grid system is really critical. It forms the basis of all the other infrastructures. Your telecommunications, your banking systems, they all rely on electricity. And if that grid is affected in any way, shape, or form, you can see the cascading effects that it will have right down the line on all the other infrastructures, even down to the ability to deliver our food, our water to grocery stores in cities and towns across the country. They are grocery stores maybe carry up to 3 days' supply. We're no longer an agrarian society where we used to grow our own food back in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. We don't have that luxury.
But their cash registers, their system of collecting money would collapse.
That's correct, including ATMs. You wouldn't be able to get to your money.
Couldn't get to your money. Your credit cards won't work.
That's
because
right.
You can't swipe them.
That's
I mean,
right.
It's a total collapse. Total. Yes. I mean, I ran into a drugstore a couple of years ago, Michael, and they had a power outage. So they were trying to do things by hand.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't do it. They chased everybody out. They just could not do it. Not only that, the employees don't know how to subtract anymore.
That's right. They're relying upon electronics. I mean, kids go to school now. They rely on their computers. They rely on calculators. They don't know how to do the math by hand.
That's true.
I did, but those days are gone. They're gonna resort to their handhelds, and if those go out, then they're really stuck.
Is there any country that has done its job to insulate its grid?
I would say perhaps Israel, because of the concerns that they have for nuclear attack, and the possibility that I've reported on this, that they might even consider using an EMP on Iran, and if that's the case, a high-altitude explosion would have an impact across the Middle East and into Europe. But they claim that they can be back up and running within 3 days.
The Iranians say that?
No, the Israelis.
The Israelis, if they got hit.
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
And I would point out, too, that the other problem for the United States is that with this heavy reliance on our national grid system, our military has a similar heavy reliance of up to about 99%, according to the DOD, to the Defense Department.
Well, and as you know, our submarines get, you know, electro notices whether to launch or not. I mean, if that is all gone, what a mess.
Yes. We have very serious problems here, and a lot of these things are not hardened because we have not taken into account EMP, the potential for an electromagnetic pulse.
Let's talk more about this, Michael, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And don't forget, every Friday, our television show Beyond Belief airs at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Gaiam Television Network. You can watch it. You can get 10 days free and participate in all their videos, too. It's an incredible, incredible program. We really enjoy it. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. At the top, click Hosts, and then the TV link opens up for you. That's also GaiamTV.com/George, GaiamTV.com/George. In the next few weeks, I'll have information on the foundation I want to set up and how you can help. But for now, just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click Hosts, and then the TV link opens up, 10 days free. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Michael Maloof with us. We're talking about his work that just came out today, A Nation Forsaken. We're talking about EMPs. Michael, how possible is it for a rogue group to get some kind of RF weaponry, smaller device, and take out a grid system over a city, maybe not the entire country?
It's very possible, and my book goes into that to some length. The problem is that anybody with any technical competency, whether it's a rogue group, a terrorist group, or even a lone wolf, with any technical knowledge, can go to a Radio Shack or some electronics store, and for about $400 can put together what might effectively be called a ray gun. But it's a type of device that can be aimed and directed at your electronics or even at cars, and then can stop them. And the thing about it is that they are, you wouldn't know what the source of it was. Now, the book goes into the fact that this information is readily available on the internet. There are some internet entities that advertise for how to make an EMP weapon.
Unbelievable. I didn't know that.
Yes. The book outlines a few of them, and I've been criticized for having it in the book, but the point is that it's out there, and our national authorities need to start taking action, not to shut down the internet, but to be much more aware of these prospects, to take action, to harden our sites, and to get a much more concerted effort underway in cooperation with utilities and with companies that deal in high electronics to harden their facilities against this prospect. It's like gun control. You're not going to stop 300 million. You're not going to collect 300 million guns. They're out there. We have a violent nation, and the reality is people have got to arm themselves, and that we need to do the same thing with EMP. We're not going to get rid of the accessibility of these components. They can be jerry-rigged, and someone can fashion one very, 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 very easily with some technical knowledge, and they're very resourceful. And we're talking about people who can be terrorist cells or even lone wolves who we don't even know. The FBI has actually pointed out that lone wolves are probably the largest danger that we're going to be facing within the United States.
I would think so. Could they probably buy it, let's say, from some expert in science and physics, yeah, and electronics?
Sure. It could be an engineering student, for example, right, who knows about this. In fact, the book goes into the fact that a DOD component actually asked some people to just go out and pick up a bunch of off-the-shelf electronics and fashion one together, and they did for less than $1,000.
That is unbelievable.
And they could be as small as a suitcase.
Does it make noise, Michael?
No.
All right, so that's silent. So if a nuke happened to be detonated above the skies, mm-hmm, would we would hear that, right?
Not necessarily. You might see a flash.
Okay.
You would not necessarily hear it. You would see a flash. You would not feel radiation effects, but you would realize the impact from the electromagnetic pulse that would knock everything out. It's intriguing because the movie Red Dawn, the new version of Red Dawn, just came out recently and actually featured that from a North Korean attack from an EMP, initially with an EMP attack, and then with the help of the Russians, they were able to invade the northwest coast of the United States. And that's plausible. that's quite plausible. The fact that the North Koreans just recently were successful in launching a three-stage missile that could reach the United States was very intriguing and was an eye-opener. But what was intriguing to me as well was the fact that they were able to orbit a package. Now, if that package was a miniaturized nuclear weapon, right, it could orbit, and it wouldn't be restricted just to the western part of the United States. It could land. I mean, it could be discharged from orbit anywhere across the United States, and exploded up to about 150 miles above the country. Ideally,
and really no way to stop it either.
No, you would not have. Now, we would not be able to. We don't have an ABM system that's capable of doing that. And ideally, if you exploded it over Kansas and it was a large enough megatonnage, it could perhaps affect electronics almost coast to coast, certainly up into Canada and down into Mexico.
And here's the problem, too, Michael. You don't know who did it. You don't know where it came from. So how do you retaliate?
That's one of the big question marks, and that's why you could have a submarine right off the coast, for example, and off of any one of our coasts. We got three coasts here, and it could be launched and off it goes. Now, someone told me the other day they are working on a technology to be able to identify all the ships and all of the submarines that are out there, but that technology still hasn't been perfected. It's still in the developing stages, but our need is now, and it's not there. They could fire off a missile within 200 miles, and as we discussed earlier, these submarines now have been quieted. You have electric submarines, and you see various countries now parking, looking for bases down in Latin America. They're trolling up and down the coasts at will. The Russians just recently were discovered to have a patrol right off of our east coast.
Yeah.
Any one of these prospects is very, very real. That if it's a nuclear ballistic missile submarine, it could be launched, and just one of those missiles could be detonated above the United States. And in fact, the Russians have even told our congressmen that if we really want to bring the United States down to its knees, we would launch an EMP attack.
Yeah, that's the way to. And we, of course, would do the same thing, wouldn't we?
Yes. Well, that's one of the concerns, for example, that the Iranians have, that Israel could launch an EMP attack to knock out that electronics and all their command and control systems, and they would be able to fly in and knock out their targets, their nuclear facilities, undetected.
Well, that's probably going to happen, don't you think?
Well, I'm hearing that it's being talked about, and that's why the Israelis have basically developed their own civil defense and ability to bring things back up within a 3-day period. So the prospects are very real.
You say there have been some congressional studies on this issue. How come it's not public, and how come they're not jumping all over the conclusions?
Well, the study was electromagnetic commission report. It was actually published. There was a preliminary report in 2004, and then a full report in 2008. There were only about 200 copies produced of the 2008 study, which was massive. It went into detail of every aspect of all of our critical infrastructures and how they would be affected by an EMP. They made recommendations. These were by scientists and people who were very, very knowledgeable of this subject. None of it was paid any attention to. It just was one of those commission reports that was then shelved, just like the ballistic missile assessment of the ballistic missile threat to the United States. We still don't have an effective anti-ballistic missile system, in spite of the fact that we had a study that was undertaken back in 1998.
Why would they shelve it? What's wrong with these people?
Well, money, politics, Any ballistic missile system is regarded by liberals and the leftists as just a means to expend a lot of money, which is unnecessary, and because we're never going to be attacked. One of the things that you mentioned a little earlier, what countries are capable of protecting themselves, and what occurred to me is the fact that China and Russia are very aware of the implications of an EMP, and they've had war on their soil. So they know firsthand what the impact is going to be, and they're preparing for it. And this is something that their documentation and all of their literature is showing that they're very aware not only of an EMP, what it can do to us, but also how they're actually preparing for such an event themselves, and actually taking measures to harden their facilities.
Anybody in Congress as an individual standing up about this?
Yeah, there are a few. Unfortunately, Roscoe Bartlett, who was the lead on all this, was defeated in his bid for re-election in Maryland. He's probably one of the foremost spokesmen. Trent Franks is another. I forget what state he's from, but what you have Congress looking at this. They'll study it. They'll talk about it. They'll hold a hearing, and then it all goes away. And then they'll periodically hold another hearing for about a half a day, and then it all goes away. There's no decisive action being taken. There's no direction. And I think, personally,
Trent Franks, by the way, Arizona.
Yes, thank you. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's correct. The thing that I believe that needs to be done is basically to create an EMP czar, someone who can, under the National Security Council, can direct all activities from the federal, the state, and the local governments to take decisive action.
Great idea. We really need something like that. To me, that is more important than the head of the Defense Department.
Yes. This would have to be someone who could coordinate and cut across the bureaucratic boundaries of various bureaucracies of each agency and each department and get it done. And that's not happening right now.
Are they afraid?
They're just not focusing on it. We've never had a war of that caliber on our soil like the Russians or the Chinese ever experienced. So consequently, we're basically lulled into complacency. And we don't think it's going to happen here type of thing, of attitude. And then you have the utilities saying, oh, we can guard against an EMP. An EMP is not going to really be all that effective. But, yeah, we can deal with lightning and lightning strikes, but if you have a storm or something like that, so they go in and replace the component. However, if you have an EMP or event, let's say even a solar storm that affects an entire region, the ability to recover is going to be astronomical. NASA has statistics out on this right now. They basically say that it would cost, if we had a major intensive storm that had a direct hit on us, it could cost upwards of $2 trillion over four years to attempt to recover, and take us up to 10 years to recover. And it would affect something like 160 million people.
How are we going to pay for that?
Well, you can't. That's why. But we can take remedial action in the meantime, of which will cost anywhere from $20 to $50 billion to start fixing these systems. But the problem is there's nobody coordinating this thing, and in some cases federal agencies that oversee the Federal Power Act lack authority, and Congress isn't focusing on this. And as you can see from recent events, they can't make a decision on anything.
Are you related at all to the Maloof family from Vegas and the basketball owners?
I'm told all the Maloofs are related somehow. My family came from Zahli, which is in the Bekaa Valley.
Sure.
And there are Maloofs up in Syria.
We may be cousins, Michael.
Say again?
We may be cousins.
We conceivably could be.
you never know.
That's correct. Long-distance cousins.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's nothing like good old Middle Eastern food.
That's right.
Did you ever know Clovis Maksud when he was at the American University?
Yes, I did. I've met him a few times. I knew him.
Brilliant guy.
Yeah, very, very, very smart.
Well, you know, this whole situation, maybe somebody will wake up. Wouldn't it be great if some congressman was hearing this show right now, picked up your work, A Nation Forsaken, and started to do something about this before it's too late?
Well, I think it would be great. In a perfect world, I think it would be great. We're losing time. They've had this commission report has been published since 2008, and the initial report was out in 2004. They've known about it, and that's why I call the book A Nation Forsaken. We've had authorities who have been fully aware of this probability and have done nothing about it. Again, agencies are aware of it. They talk about it. Now, the Defense Department is doing some remedial efforts to harden sites, but for the most part, they're not hardened because no one's thinking of a direct attack of any kind. So, and also, our bases, our posts, have a 99% reliance on our national grid system. And so if that goes out, they're hurting as well. And that would also include telecommunications.
What's the Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition Center? What is that?
Yeah, that's a SCADA. That is an automated control system. It's into every aspect of our automated life that we now have. They are often in remote areas. They're automatic. They're remote monitors, and they monitor operations of critical systems such as our utilities and our telecommunications. They're out of sight. You know, they monitor the system's performances such as voltage, current in electric power plants, the delivery of power into electrical systems. They measure the temperature in nuclear power plants. And they send off alarms when it exceeds normal operating conditions. All of this could be lost because of their extreme vulnerability. They can also issue commands to generating plants under their control to increase power output automatically in case there's a loss. And all these actions again are automatic, and they occur within seconds without any human involvement. But if they go out, we're stuck. We're really hurting, and this is basically what happened in Japan with their nuclear reactor. All those systems failed. Even their backup system failed, even though it was ideally supposed to work. And we have a similar condition. If the electromagnetic pulse is intense enough, it could absolutely affect the backup system.
And well, we don't have backup transmitters, do we? The big transformers.
Big transformers. No, we do not. They are specially designed. They're big. They have to be custom made, and they're all made overseas. You cannot keep them in stock because of the cost. And they all come from overseas now, from the Germans.
China, right?
In China, yes.
Absolutely. Are they made with wood too?
I don't think so, but I would hope not.
I would heard that's part of it might be wood. Well, Michael, first of all, The Nation Forsaken, I guess the book is out. You can get it on WND. Where else?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
All right. Well, they're everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah, I hope so, yes.
All right. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about A Nation Forsaken, EMP, the escalating threat of an American catastrophe. It could happen at any time, and we are not doing anything about it. Let's get your take on it when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.